The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here. SpaceX, Boca Chica, Starship, Test 9. When? Bob, a very good evening to you. We've waited and waited for a license. Has it been issued yet?
Oh, yeah. So as I predicted, the FAA under Trump is no longer spending months retyping SpaceX's investigation into its previous flight mishap with Starship and Super Heavy, the eighth flight back in March. SpaceX completed its investigation. It had submitted it to FAA. And late yesterday, the FAA released its launch license, issued the launch license to allow SpaceX to launch, and the date to that, and SpaceX today confirmed that with an update and details, is May 27th. That's next Tuesday, with the launch window opening at 6:30 p.m. Central. And the live stream beginning around 30 minutes earlier. I will embed that on Behind the Black, of course, so we can all watch in excitement. SpaceX, at the same time they announced this, they described some details about the flight. For one thing, they will be reusing the Super Heavy booster that flew and was captured successfully on flight number 7. They did some testing on it. It's most of the burst is going to fly. They had to replace some parts, some pieces, but essentially it's the same booster. And because they're going to be using that booster a second time, they've decided to change its flight. It is not going to come back to be captured. They're going to expend it. They're going to send it into the Gulf of Mexico, depending on how you want to call that. But by doing so, they're also going to use it to test what they call off-nominal flight scenarios. They want to test the booster in some more extreme environments so they can improve its operation on future flights. So that's what they're going to do with the Super Heavy. Starship itself is going to repeat its plan from the previous flights that didn't happen, which is it's going to be restarting a Raptor engine to show that it can do that in orbit. It's going to be testing a deployment system of Starlink satellites as well as other satellites. And it's going to also be testing its thermal system and its the various ways equipment on the outside of the spacecraft upon reentry in the thermal hot environment as it comes back. And so that's the plan. In releasing this announcement, they also released their report for the previous failure. And it appears that failure occurred because of a failure of a Raptor engine, which caused a fire at the base of Starship, which eventually caused the engines to shut down and the automatic termination system to destroy the spacecraft. They also pointed out that this was a different problem than the seventh failure. Even though both failures occurred about the same time in the flight, they were caused by different things. And they pointed out that what caused the failure on the seventh flight was vibrations, harmonics. And they said that on the eighth flight, the fixes they installed for that worked. This is interesting because there's been a lot of speculation that both flights failed because of this harmonic vibration problem. But it appears, no, that's not the case. And in fact, the vibration and harmonics problem was solved on the eighth flight. And so anyway, that's where we stand. We should be expecting excitement next Tuesday. Stay tuned. Of course, this will all depend on weather, but the time of year is good for this kind of flight.
We go to Vandenberg Air Base in the West Coast and the famous California Coastal Commission. How's the battle with them, Bob?
Well, the Coastal Commission now is irrelevant. It doesn't even come up. The Air Force issued this week a draft approval for a second SpaceX launch pad at Vandenberg. This launch pad is called SLC-6, which is pronounced Slick-6. And this is a launch pad that was built at Vandenberg originally for the space shuttle military flights, but it was never used. And later on, it was leased to ULA for its Delta family of rockets and was used for many years, but now has been retired. The Delta is now retired. So back a year or two ago, SpaceX was given a lease for this particular launch pad, but they haven't done anything with it, but they want to fire Falcon Heavies and Falcon 9s from it. And the Air Force has now released a draft environmental impact statement approving SpaceX's use of this pad and adaption and redesign of this pad for that purpose. The draft assessment is open to public comment through early July, with a final version expected to be approved in the fall. It appears the Air Force wants it approved. It doesn't really care about what the California Coastal Commission says because it has no power. It also appears it doesn't care what the FAA says. A week earlier, the FAA had approved SpaceX's launch rate at Vandenberg, approved an increase in that launch rate to up to 50 launches a year. But the Air Force, with this second pad, is approving SpaceX to have as many as 100 launches per year. And so I have a feeling that FAA is going to have to get in line with what the Air Force is willing to approve here. But either way, we're going to see a lot more launches coming out of Vandenberg based on this approval by the Air Force.
Starlink, that is a private enterprise paying for the Starship tests. Starlink is one by one taking its business to new countries, and now South Africa, which is in the news recently because of a presentation in the Oval Office. But the controversy says South Africa wants Starlink, and Musk says, okay, Bob, drum roll, what does Musk say?
He says no, and he says no very bluntly. And this relates to that Oval Office appearance of the head of South Africa.
Cyril Ramaphosa, the Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of South Africa. Yes, please.
Yeah. Well, either way, the South African government is trying to get Starlink to be offered to its citizens in South Africa. But Musk has consistently said no, he's not going to do it. And the reason he says no is because South Africa's law, which is very bigoted, insists that he impose racial quotas on his hiring and ownership. In other words, if for Starlink to be in South Africa, 30% of it must be owned by what they call what is the term they use? Traditionally disadvantaged populations, which in South Africa means black race. And Musk, who's born in South Africa, says, well, and let me quote him, I was born in South Africa but can't get a license to operate in Starlink because I'm not black. And he's not going to go along with this. He doesn't give up ownership of Starlink under any deal. And so that's where it stands. And this is just more evidence of proof that the South African government is imposing racial quotas and establishing laws that are favorable to some races over others, and it's wrong, and it should stop.
Voyager Technologies, what is that?
All right, this is one of the four companies or consortiums that are building private space stations or proposing private space stations for NASA or for everybody, commercial stations over the next year to replace ISS. And so Voyager Technologies has announced that it's going to go public. It's filing the paperwork for its expected initial public offering of stock as it competes for the major contract for NASA. Now, I rank the four consortiums periodically, and this particular announcement by Voyager Technologies actually had me lower them to the bottom of the list. Because even though they are going to go public, they revealed pretty quickly in this paperwork that they've built nothing. Unlike two of the four have built a lot, one has built some, the third has built some, but they have built nothing. All they have done is put together and gotten approved their design for their space station. But that's it. That's just paperwork. It's basically just view graphs. It's a PowerPoint presentation. And so I've lowered them to the bottom of the list of these four companies. NASA is going to issue a major – NASA's given three of these consortiums some development money to start work. And as I say, two of those three have spent money to cut metal. Starlab, which is being built by Voyager, has built nothing. The fourth company, Avast, hasn't taken any NASA money. And what NASA wanted with this development contract was to see which companies it should pick for the major contract. NASA is going to probably pick one or two for the big contract. And so of these four consortiums, two are probably going to fall to the wayside, maybe three. And it's a question of which one. And right now, Voyager Technologies is at the bottom of my list.
The four companies, Haven One, that's Vast, Axiom, that's Axiom, Orbital Reef, that is a consortium that Blue Origin participates in, along with Sierra Space, and Starlab, that's Voyager Space, Airbus, and Northrop Grumman. Those are the four right now. Can we expect more, Bob?
That's an interesting question. There's going to be something. There's going to be a shakeup related to Lunar Gateway and that NASA was proposing. New Lunar Gateway has a lot of components being built by Europe and others, not by NASA and the United States. And so, if NASA cancels that, those modules being built by Europe and others will not have a place to go. And I've been thinking what's going to happen is they might repurpose those modules for other space stations, either one for Europe, either one for Voyager Technologies, which has aligned itself with a lot of European entities, or maybe with the Indian space station that's being built. And so we're going to have to wait and see how this plays out.
The Space Force with those extremely unusual uniforms, but in any event, they're cutting their workforce. Who's leaving?
Well, you know, when the Space Force was created during the first Trump administration, the whole point of it was to try to create an agency focused on space within the military, because previously Air Force ran it, and the Air Force had other agendas, and so it wasn't really focused on space. And so that's why the Space Force was created. But when it was created, I pointed out the real danger, which is government agencies tend to grow, build turf empires, and they hire people they don't need, and they grow with bureaucracy. And it appears that's what the Space Force has done, no surprise, during the 4 years of the Biden administration. And so now, under Trump's effort to shrink the federal government and the workforce, Space Force has announced it's going to cut its civilian workforce by 14%. This will be about between 800 and 1,000 people removed from their jobs, laid off. And, of course, there are a lot of people screaming, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible. That's the typical thing you'll read in the press. But the simple fact is that the Space Force's only job right now, is to issue contracts to private companies to build rockets, launch satellites, and spacecraft for the military. So there's not a need for a lot of people within the Space Force. All they're doing is issuing contracts. And so this reduction in force is probably a good thing, and maybe it's not even enough. We should definitely allow it to go on and see how that plays out.
Bob, did I tell you that I ordered on eBay all 8 volumes of Tom Corbett's Space Cadet?
No, oh, you did, huh?
Yeah, I've got them all, and I was reading the first book again. And it's compulsive reading. It's almost entirely dialogue. It's quite wonderful. And, of course, I get to be 11 years old when I read.
You realize, though, John, you're reading literature that written for an 11-year-old back in our youth is probably now adult-level literature today, unfortunately.
Well, that would explain why this 77-year-old was reading it. It's great fun. And Willie Lay was the technical consultant. And Bob...
Billy, really? Okay, well, he was the engineer.
The science fiction writer. He was on all the magazines, Astounding, Amazing.
Willie Lay was the first science space journalist ever. That's who he was. He was a German, came to the United States, and wrote about space throughout the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And he was the first space journalist. I admire him greatly.
Great fun, but they could leave one spaceship in their space uniform and jump over to the other one, and their metal boots would catch them. It's all wonderful, Bob.
Magnets.
And they're always pulling ray guns on bad guys. I look forward to all 8 volumes. I don't think I'm going to read them carefully, but it's like a time machine. All right, forgive the detail here. We're going to Tiangong 3. What's happened?
Tiangong 3 is China's space station. Well, the Chinese, in a science report paper, announced that they had discovered a new microbe on Tiangong 3 that appears to be designed and has evolved to survive in the harsh environment of space in weightlessness. Now, this sounds, a lot of people will say, this sounds like Tom Corbett's Space Cadet science fiction, and oh my God, we're all going to die, the Andromeda Strain. But the truth is, this kind of stuff has actually been discovered routinely increasingly on Mir, on ISS for decades. Bacteria, microbes, they evolve in different environments relatively easily. They don't necessarily become a threat. In fact, they haven't become a threat to us, but they definitely change. And so this is just another discovery along those lines. And in fact, they discovered dozens of new microbes in the clean room for the Phoenix Mars lander when it was being built in the early 2000s. So this could even occur on Earth. This is not that new, but it's of interest because in those environments, they're very limited environments, ecologies. And so finding out this stuff is important because it helps you build your space stations, your interplanetary spaceships more properly.
Bob, has the Fish and Wildlife Service just confiscated the trees that I own?
It's trying to. Yes, this is a story I picked up from somebody who's doing a project in Boston in the Massachusetts area. It appears that just before the election in October, Fish and Wildlife decided to expand gigantically its regulatory rule in the United States. And this relates to endangered bats. They suddenly decided, rather than focus on protecting the actual known hyperniculums and places where the bats are known to go, they decided that they should protect any place where bats may go, and that includes any trees they may roost on in the future. And so under this new rule, if you're doing any project that's an acre or larger, any project that's going to disturb trees in that project, you can't cut any tree down without getting approval from Fish and Wildlife. So essentially what Fish and Wildlife has done now, and they have maps on Behind the Black showing the area of coverage, and it's almost the entire eastern United States and some of the north of the United States past Mississippi. You want to cut a tree down and you've got a project that's an acre or larger, you got to get permission from the Fish and Wildlife because a bat may have roosted on that tree. And it doesn't matter if the tree is in the middle of a forest with thousands of trees all around. You're cutting a tree down. They may roost on it if the Fish and Wildlife wants to tell you whether you can.
Bob Zimmerman, Behind the Black. We're going exploring of a asteroid inbound. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Every year, people make the same fitness goal, train harder. But most fail because recovery gets ignored, especially connective tissue that muscles depend on to grow. Frog Fuel was developed by Navy SEALs and perfected by a Stanford-trained scientist, delivering 15 grams of nano-hydrolyzed collagen protein that digests in just 15 minutes. It's science-backed and ready to drink. No mixing, no sugar, no junk. This year, don't just train harder, recover smarter. Go to frogfuel.com. That's frogfuel.com. Stay unbreakable.